Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. We have a fun show that probably resonates with a lot of you out there, and that is, it might be time to hit the reset. Hit the reset on life when snooze is bigger than stop. How many times are you going to hit the snooze on your life before you move forward? What are you waiting on? It's easy to adopt Scarlett O'Hara's thought process. I won't think about that today. I'll think about that tomorrow. After all, tomorrow's another day. Fear and self-doubt can play a big role in keeping you stuck, only wishing and dreaming of a better day. Did you know you have the power to push forward? Unraveling the anxiety and getting to the sticking point might take some work, but putting your dreams off until another day means you should have plenty of time. You take that in, and I'll take this in, and we will start unraveling. You know, last week, as the alarm on my phone was going off, I noticed something. Now, some may say this is super convenient and proceed without a second thought, but it hit me with a different message. Why was the snooze bigger than the stop on my alarm? Now, this may not ring true for all cell phones, but I'm pretty sure this design has similarities in traditional alarm clocks as well. Right under the word alarm, there is this big, oblong, orange, glowing button begging me to hit it. Stop is much, much smaller and all the way at the bottom of the screen. You have to really pry your eyes open and be intentional and accurate to hit it. Now, why do you suppose that is? Why would my phone want me to delay the day and go back to sleep? Just being courteous? Or does it assume it will take me more than one attempt to get up? When oversleeping is the one thing that will keep people with an early flight from sleeping, why would they make snooze so tempting and accessible? How many times do you take the tempting and accessible alternative in life? Now, obviously, this show isn't just about oversleeping. We're going to look at how this idea translates into your own life. Even though, let me mention this. According to one survey, more than one in three adults press snooze three times before getting up in the morning. And more than half of adults in their 20s and early 30s say they hit the snooze button every morning. And while it's not a huge deal to snag a few extra minutes of shut-eye, once in a while, but fighting your alarm on a regular basis might actually leave you feeling more tired. There are several levels of sleep, including light sleep and deep sleep. Is that technical enough for you? Once you've moved through deep sleep, you hit the REM sleep. We've all heard this. During REM, which stands for rapid eye movement, your brain is highly active and you experience intense dreams, even if you don't remember them. But despite that intense activity, REM sleep is actually highly restorative, and getting enough of it is crucial for feeling sharp and focused the next day. You usually experience your first REM stage about 90 minutes after you first nod off and cycle through several times throughout the night. So what does all this have to do with the snooze button? Well, when your alarm goes off in the morning, you're usually nearing the end of your last REM cycle. Wake up, get yourself out of bed, and that REM cycle ends. Hit the snooze button and go back to sleep, and you throw yourself right back into the REM cycle. Then when your alarm goes off 10 minutes later, it wakes you up in the middle of the REM cycle instead of the end. As a result, you feel foggy and disoriented. Not exactly the best way to start your day. Okay. now that we've cleared that up, let's move on to the metaphorical snooze, the one you keep hitting instead of checking off milestones on your life plan. Maybe you're overwhelmed by the sheer pressure of your day-to-day life and can't find a moment to plan for your future goals or even know what those are. Even the thought of sitting down to figure it out seems foreign. Is that you? Are you trying to manage everything for everyone and barely keeping it together? Well, help is on its way. We'll look at ways to prioritize and set goals that incorporate your vision while freeing you from the responsibility of keeping it all together. Maybe you're afraid, riddled with self-doubt, unsure that what you want is even obtainable. You've spent the better part of your life trying to get ahead, but always being pushed to the back. How could you possibly spend time goal planning? It seems like such a waste of time. Well, time to hit the reset on those ideas. You deserve it all. Not a little bit, not some of it, but you deserve it all. Let's find a way to calm your fears so that you can see your true potential. Maybe you know exactly what you want and how to get there, but for some reason, you're stuck. You can't move forward. Every day you start with good intention, but life sidetracks you, or maybe it's you getting in your own way. But whatever the reason, 2 steps forward equals 3 steps back. Let's figure it out and pull out the stopper. You have amazing stuff to do, and you're only a couple of steps from making it happen. Procrastination is an emotion regulation problem, not a time management problem, said Dr. Tim Seichel, professor of psychology and a member of the procrastination research group. Yes, there is a procrastination research group. They're out of Carleton University in Ottawa. Procrastination isn't a unique character flaw or a mysterious curse on your ability to time manage, but a way of coping with challenging emotions and negative moods induced by certain tasks like boredom, anxiety, insecurity, frustration, resentment, self-doubt, and beyond. The particular nature of our aversion depends on the given task itself. It may be due to something inherently unpleasant about the task. Having to clean a dirty bathroom, nobody wants to do that. Or organizing a long, boring spreadsheet for your boss. But it might also result from deeper feelings related to the task, such as self-doubt, low self-esteem, anxiety, insecurity. Staring at a blank document, you might be thinking, I'm not smart enough to write on this. Even if I am, what will people think of it? Writing is so hard. What if I do a bad job? All of this can lead us to think that putting the document aside and cleaning out that spice drawer instead is a pretty good idea. Have you ever just put things off because you're just not sure how you're going to accomplish them? There's an entire body of research dedicated to the ruminative, self-blaming thoughts many of us tend to have in the wake of procrastination. These thoughts are known as procrastinatory cognitions. The thoughts we have about procrastination, they typically exacerbate our distress, so they make it worse. That contributes to further procrastination, says Dr. Siros. But the momentary relief we feel when procrastinating is actually what makes the cycle especially vicious. In the immediate present, putting off a task provides relief. Don't you feel good when you say, I'm going to give myself a break. Time out. I'm not doing that. Immediately you feel better, right? You've been rewarded for procrastinating. As we know from basic behaviorism, that when we're rewarded for something, what do we want to do? We want to do it again, right? That was a great reward, and it was easy. All we did was put something off. This is precisely why procrastination tends not to be a one-off behavior, but a cycle. This cycle can become a chronic habit. over time, chronic procrastination has not only had serious productivity costs, but also destructive habits on our mental and physical health. So what do? Even the most motivated person has something they procrastinate about. I know I do. I know I need to exercise. I know the health benefits mentally and physically, but it's the thing I procrastinate about the most. My New Year's resolution this year was to stop feeling guilty about things I don't want to do. Is that a solution? No, it's a justification. I still feel guilty, even though I gave myself permission not to accept that feeling. Why am I putting it off? It's hard. I don't enjoy it. It takes time away from other things that I actually want to do. I hear from so many people, oh, I love to work out. It really helps me mentally. I don't get that same feeling. If it seems ironic that we procrastinate to avoid negative feelings but end up feeling even worse, that's because it is. And once again, we have evolution to thank. Procrastination is a perfect example of present bias, our hardwired tendency to prioritize short-term needs ahead of long-term ones. We really weren't designed to think ahead into the future because we needed to focus on providing for ourselves in the here and now. That was said by Dr. Hal Havisford. He's a psychologist. He said that our future selves are more like strangers than they are actually a part of ourselves. When we procrastinate, parts of our brain actually think that the task we're putting off and the accompanying negative feelings that await us on the other side are somebody else's problems. To make things worse, we're even less able to make thoughtful, future-oriented decisions in the midst of stress. When faced with a task that makes us feel anxious or insecure, our threat detector part of the brain, the amygdala, perceives that task as a genuine threat. In this case, it's just to our self-esteem or our well-being, but still threat. Even though we intellectually recognize that putting off this task will create more stress for ourselves in the future, our brains are still wired to be more concerned with removing the threat in the present. And the researchers call this the amygdala hijack. So that's not letting us off the hook. Procrastination is something that we can get a handle on and turn around, but it does give us a window into what's really going on. Is it just something we keep putting off, or is there something more to the story? Well, several studies show that self-compassion supports motivation and personal growth. Not only does it decrease psychological distress, which we know is a primary culprit for procrastination, it also activates and boosts our motivation, enhances feelings of self-worth, and fosters positive emotions like optimism, wisdom, curiosity, and personal initiative. Isn't that great? Best of all, self-compassion doesn't require anything external, just a commitment to meeting your challenges with greater acceptance and kindness rather than rumination regret. So, it sounds like I am right on track with my New Year's resolution. However, forgiving myself is only the first step. I'm still not getting to the gym, which is actually good for me. Oh, and don't tell my brain that all I have to do is forgive myself for every thought and action I purposely put off. Okay, obviously that's not what they're saying here, but they're saying be kind to yourself, and recognizing the struggle will help you work out a solution to move forward. And that makes sense to me. As a person who typically sees things as black and white, yes and no, spending some time finding the solution and being kind to myself is something I can definitely get behind. Not there yet? That's okay. It's early and we have some more ground to cover. If you're wondering about the reasons behind your procrastination, we're going to take a little quick quiz. See if any of this sounds familiar. You might want to get a pen and paper because I'll let you know where you are on the scale once you're done. There are 8 questions. Actually, there's 9. So, ask yourself, 1, when faced with a task, do you think of all the ways it could go wrong? 2, do you picture how important people in your life might react if you failed? 3, do you believe it's better to not try at all than to try your best and fail? 4, are you overwhelmed by the possibility of new responsibilities if you are successful? 5, do you subscribe to the idea, if I do well, then others will expect more from me? 6, do you feel your success will lead to other people finding out the real you? 7, do you believe that if you're going to do something, you should try to do it perfectly? 8, do you find it difficult to persist when things aren't going just right? 9, would you rather avoid doing something than doing it imperfectly? Okay, total them up. Look at your yeses and look at your noes. How you answered may tell a lot about why you procrastinate. A yes response to questions 1 through 3 mean a fear of failure is behind your procrastination. The thought of putting in effort but still failing makes you anxious, so you choose avoiding and procrastinating instead. In this way, when your project fails, you can rationalize that it wasn't a true test of your abilities anyway. If only you'd had more time. On the flip side, a yes to questions 4 through 6 may mean you fear success, not failure. Procrastination protects you from the higher expectations and greater responsibilities that may come with succeeding. Like those who procrastinate because they fear failure, you keep yourself safe from facing your true limits by avoiding challenges and putting them off. Does that make sense to you? Well, if you identified with questions 7 through 9, perfectionism may underlie your avoidance. Because you believe that things should be done perfectly, the result is that nothing gets done at all. When faced with a task, you become overwhelmed and frustrated, paralyzed by impossible standards. Is that it? Are your expectations too high? Are you that black and white person that just says, forget it, either all or nothing. I can't do it perfectly. I'm not going to do it at all. Something to think about. You know, Mel Robbins is the author of The 5-Second Rule. I've talked about her before. She's now a TV talk show host. She's on 5 days a week, so you'll have to look that up. And one of the most booked public speakers on the planet. If you've not heard about her or The 5-Second Rule, lift the rock. So, have you heard about it? So, as we were discussing the emotional side of procrastination, what she says is, if you are waiting on a feeling to do something, if you are motivated or acting on the feeling that you should do something, that feeling is never going to come. You will be waiting forever. Boy, that really hit me because I'm never going to feel like going to the gym. So what she's saying is, you just have to go. Instead, she says, when you get an impulse towards your goal, if you don't act on it within 5 seconds, you'll talk yourself out of it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, and just do it. She stumbled upon this revelation one day when she was unemployed, sinking in debt, and unable to find the motivation to get out of bed and do anything about it. It changed her life, and now the lives of millions. everybody is writing into her, coming on her show and telling her, from the smallest decision to pick up the phone and call a loved one to big, huge business decisions. Now, she also did the research and found that the motivation didn't happen by chance, but there is real scientific proof to this technique. Want to know what that is? Well, first, the 5-second rule is a form of metacognition, which means that it's a way of tricking your brain in order to achieve your greater goals. The rule allows you to beat your brain at its own game and distract it from the way that it tries to sabotage you. Most of us live our lives in autopilot mode. In fact, research has shown that 40% of your day is spent on autopilot. When you're on autopilot, you're operating solely out of habit. And for almost all of us, our habits are not serving us well. Your brain wants to protect you. It wants to keep you safe. It does this by keeping you from doing anything that feels scary, hard, or uncertain. So our default habits are usually doing what feels safe and easy. Our default habits are doing the same old things over and over and over. In our default habits, in autopilot mode, we are not living our greatness out. We are stuck and we're not improving. And most of all, we feel out of control in our own lives. When you feel out of control, when you're living without a feeling of real control over your life and your outcomes, you lose functioning of something called the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is really, really important. It's the part of the brain that's involved in things like decision-making, planning, and working towards your goals. When you count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're taking a deliberate action. The countdown pushes you out of autopilot. And when you act, you're exercising control and you're turning on your prefrontal cortex. By taking actions that make you feel in control of your life, this will literally begin to change your life in every single way. As you use this rule, you cultivate what researchers call an internal locus of control, which means that you believe you have control over your outcomes and future success. That's pretty cool, huh? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And you can't go the other way. It doesn't work. She's done the research. You have to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And it could be for anything. You're at a function. You find somebody across the room. You think, gosh, I need to go talk to that person. If you don't take that first step forward, you're going to talk yourself out of it. Now, you could use this in a negative way too. Don't use any prejudgment. Go ahead and just do something. Obviously, we're using this in a positive manner. We're talking about positive goals, steps towards your goals, right? Isn't it comforting and inspiring to know that you have so much control over your life? Just like you can get buried in negative habits that keep you spinning on a never-ending wheel to nowhere, you also have the power to create healthy habits that will help you realize your dreams. The point is, you have the power. These aren't the cards you've been dealt. You aren't cursed for life. You aren't powerless and just along for the ride. You have real power, so it's time to take it back. Here are some ideas I found from Celestine Chow. She's the founder of Personal Excellence, where she shares her advice for productivity and achieving excellence in life. So these are a couple of things that you can do to sort of get back on track. Number one, break your work into little steps. Part of the reason why we procrastinate is because subconsciously we find the work too overwhelming, right? Break it down into little parts, then focus on one part at a time. If you still procrastinate, then break it down even further. Soon your task will be so simple that you'll think, geez, why didn't I do this a long time ago, right? Are you just thinking about the end result? Anytime you set a goal, you want to set those mini milestones. Then, once you accomplish each one of those, you get that reward, positive reward, not the reward for procrastinating. Number two, change your environment. Different environments have a different impact on your productivity. Look at your work desk and your room. You can look wherever you are right now. Do they make you want to work, or do they make you want to snuggle up and sleep? If it's the latter, you should look at changing your workspace. One thing to note is that an environment that makes us feel inspired today might not make us feel inspired tomorrow. So it may be time to change things up on an ongoing basis, and who doesn't love to do that? Number three, create a detailed timeline with specific deadlines. Having just one deadline for your work is like an invitation to procrastinate. That's because we get the impression that we have time and we keep pushing everything back until it's too late, right? Are you cramming it all in at the last minute? Break your project, break it down, then create an overall timeline with specific deadlines for each small task. This way, you know how much time you have to finish each certain thing and by what date. Your timeline must be robust. If you make it wonky with lots of little holes, then it's easy to put it off. Number four, eliminate your procrastination pit stops. If you procrastinate a little too much, maybe that's because you make it easy to procrastinate. Identify your browser bookmarks that take up a lot of your time and shift them to a separate folder that's less accessible. Disable the automatic notification options on your email. Get rid of any distractions around you. I've talked about this before. Limit your number of tabs that you have open on your computer. That's huge. If you tell yourself, I'm only going to keep two tabs open, okay, maybe three. You really, if you stick to it, and that's your healthy boundary, then you can work within those three and you won't have all those distractions. If your phone is a source of time wasting, consider reorganizing your apps and adding a passcode. I know, I hate passcodes too, but this way it's going to slow you down. You can even delete social media apps from your phone or give yourself designated playtime. 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes at night. I promise you won't miss anything. Hang out with people who inspire you to take action. If you are able to spend just 10 minutes talking to people like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, you'd be inspired to act, more inspired to act than if you spent 10 minutes doing nothing, right? The people we are with influence our behaviors. Of course, spending time with Bill Gates every day is probably not feasible, but the principle applies, the hidden power of every single person around you. Identify the people, friends, colleagues, family members who really impress you. Most likely, they're the go-getters, the hard workers, a charismatic bunch, and hang out with them more. Being immersed will help you pick up positive energy, tips, and motivation. Also, get a buddy. Having a companion makes the whole process much more fun. Ideally, your buddy should be someone who has their own set of goals. Both of you will hold each other accountable to your goals and plans. It's not necessary for you to have the same goals. In fact, it's even better that you don't, because then you can learn from each other. Definitely create opportunities to meet in person, not just over email or text. This way you can share your progress, you can brainstorm ways to handle challenges and set new goals and action steps. Oh, and you can have a little coffee, a little ketchup. That's the fun part. Tell others about your goal. This really helps you become accountable. Tell all your friends, colleagues, acquaintance, family members. Now, whenever you see them, they're bound to ask you about the status of the project. This will help you stay accountable and might give you a little more energy to push forward to accomplish more. I gotta accomplish that last milestone before I run into those people again. Seek out someone who's already achieved the outcome. What is it you want to accomplish here? And who are the people who have accomplished this already? Go seek them out and connect with them. seeing living proof that your goals are achievable is all that matters. This might really trigger you into action by really seeing it come to life. Re-clarify your goals. Especially if you're procrastinating and putting your goals off, you are evolving and you are changing, right? If you've been procrastinating for an extended period of time, it might reflect a misalignment between you and what you want. Oftentimes, we outgrow our goals and we discover more about ourselves, but we don't change our goals to reflect that. Get away from your work and take some time to regroup. What exactly do you want to achieve? What should you do? What are the steps to take? Does your current work align with that? If not, what can you do about it? And remember, some people think goals mean huge life-altering goals. If you want to become an effective goal setter, you'll set smaller, achievable goals as you go. What do you want to do in the next 90 days? What do you want to do in the next 6 months? What do you want to have done before the end of the year? Those types of goals. And they can be as minimal and as large. You can have maybe short-term goals, mid-range goals, long-term goals. Write them down. Stop overcomplicating things. Are you waiting for that perfect time? That perfect time to get something done? Well, ditch that thought, because there is never a perfect time. If you keep waiting for one, you are never going to accomplish anything. Perfectionism is one of the biggest reasons for procrastination. Get a grip and just do it. At the end of the day, it boils down to just taking action. You can do all the strategizing, planning, hypothesizing, but if you don't take action, nothing's going to happen. You know, Ben Franklin said, "You may delay, but time will not. And lost time is never found again." I don't know about you, but as life moves on and I get older, time goes at warp speed. And I sort of feel behind. I feel like there's so much I want to do. There's so much I want to accomplish. And I think that's what motivates me, is maybe the fear of not getting everything done. So I don't want to be motivated by fear, but it definitely creates a little bit more sense of urgency. You know, there's so many things I'm passionate about that I want to get accomplished and get out there and share with everyone else. What's your motivation? We talked a lot about procrastination tonight, but what's your motivation? How are we going to turn procrastination into motivation? What do you need to do to get over that hump? Well, I think we've recognized a lot of different things. You know, we started out by talking how easy it is to put off today. Put off today for tomorrow. What is that that we can do today? Whatever that statement is. It's so true. We put things off thinking there's going to be another day to accomplish that. We also get in a rut of just busyness, where we're just running, doing all these different things. We're keeping occupied, but are we really moving towards our goal? Are we really doing something meaningful and powerful in our lives? Or are we just staying busy, avoiding the inevitable, which is really goal setting and really going for it? And why are we doing that? We talked about self-doubt, you know, really having the fear of not doing something good enough. And then we also took that little test where we found out, well, hey, you might feel that you're really going to accomplish it. And then what? Then the expectation is so high. Everybody's going to expect this every single time. So you just sort of take that middle of the road approach. Are you hitting the snooze over and over again? Do you feel like your routine is in a rut? What about being kind to ourselves? That was sort of a revelation. Hey, just have to be kind to yourself. No, you sort of have to meet yourself where you are in the dilemma. You know, understanding that you have this challenge. Now, let's get to the root of the problem. Instead of, for instance, me just saying, I'm just so busy, I don't have time to work out, I just can't find time to put it into my day. No, I realize my procrastination is an emotional avoidance. So now let me get down to the root of that. Why am I having that avoidance? It's not a time issue. So really being willing to do the work. We talked a lot about Mel Robbins and the 5-second rule. Definitely, if you get a chance to check that book out, you can also get that on Audible, which is pretty cool because it's actually her giving you the coaching. So you can hear her direct sort of Bostonian accent. She's really funny. So you can kind of get her shaking you into understanding, so to speak. But it's a fun listen, and she's got several different things up on Audible. But the 5-second rule really makes sense. And where else could you apply that in your day-to-day? Where else are you avoiding taking a step and doing something, activating something? You know, it might be worth writing those things down, you know, keeping a little notebook or sticky note on your desk or something in your purse or, you know, in your car that you can become aware of when you're doing this. It's so important to be self-aware about all the opportunities that you miss and why are you missing those? What's causing that? We talked about, you know, some of the things that Mel does is she definitely concentrates on herself. She does the 30 before 7:30. So once she gets up in the morning, she dedicates 30 minutes to just herself. You know, she's a busy, busy person. And if we all talk about being busy, she seriously is busy. Now she has a talk show 5 days a week. So what she does is she spends those 30 minutes doing whatever she needs to do to just really nurture herself and work on her own goals. Because the minute you grab your phone, turn it on, check Facebook, go to email, you're immediately sucked into somebody else's life, right? Why don't you try turning off the alarm, not hitting the snooze on your phone, turning off the alarm, and then flipping your phone over so you get no alerts, no lights going off or anything like that. Get up. Do your morning routine, whatever that may be. Get your coffee or whatever you do and spend some time by yourself. Just focusing on you and your goals and what you want to do next with your life. Really, really important to dedicate that time. Then, as you're getting ready to step outside to go into the car, obviously you can check your phone to make sure someone's not getting a hold of you or there's no morning meeting that's been changed. But just try that. If you try anything towards procrastination, give that a try. Just spend the beginning of your morning on yourself. Now, if you have small children, I realize that's hard to do. But maybe you have to get up a little bit earlier before they get up to do that. But find that time. I challenge you, define or redefine your goals. Even if your goal is to start being more productive, evaluate the emotional blocks that are keeping you from moving forward. Make a plan, then reassess that plan and add more granulated steps. Once you have a manageable strategy, you are ready to 5-4-5-4-3-2-1 and go. One step forward is better than not moving at all. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encourage Mentology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone threw her into the past was clear.